Checking on the Arts is made possible by Memphis College of Art. Our good friends at Tennessee Shakespeare Company had a fabulous production of Richard III, and they are about to do something, as we would say, almost completely different. It is 12th night. It opens next Thursday, runs through the 21st. Dan McClary is the founder and producing artistic director at Tennessee Shakespeare Company, and he's directing this show, and he's joined me today. Welcome, Dan. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me, Daryl.
12th night, it's, as I said, a completely different sort of feel and attitude, certainly, than Richard III, one of Shakespeare's later plays, 1601 or two. I know you guys are going to have some fun with it, so tell us about what you're doing with 12th Night.
If you don't have fun with it, you have a completely different animal on your hands. Although, you know, the play is it's actually quite popular. It's one of the more popular plays, has remained so for 400 years. But it's his last... And I didn't realize this until I started getting into it. Outside of what are called, what scholars would call, which I am, and I am not one of them, would call his problem plays, which have great whacks of comedy in them. It's really his last comedy.
Right.
And it was situated between the last draft he made of Hamlet and King Lear, roughly speaking. And then he launches into these so-called problem plays that I don't think are problems, but they have not so satisfactory endings for a lot of people, like All's Well That Ends Well, Measure for Measure, Troilus and Cressida. And so what that tells me is he was dealing with a lot of complexities, not only artistically, but quite likely personally as well. And Twelfth Night is, you know, it's a beautiful text, I should say, for those of us who deal with words on paper. There's no foul paper of it. There's no quarto version of it. We only get the 1623 first folio version, and there's lots of stage direction in it as well, which you know, gives us hints.
Right.
Shakespeare, for instance, may have played one of the mariners, Antonio, which is a repeating role in the play, or a repeating role in the canon. But he gets interested in people being not who they are, and potentially loving not where their intelligence would have them lead them. And this sets them up for loving people who might be of the same gender, might be of a different skin color, might be a different age, might speak a different tongue. And so in his last he deals with the complexity of this. So it has a great deal of elegance and maturity in it. But at the same time, it has more music in it than any of his other plays, more songs than any of his other plays. And yet, of course, he pilfers, as we've talked about before with you, he pilfers so much from other people who came before him, masters before him, to create his plays. But here he creates a number of innovations that we're having a good time with. And it's called Twelfth Night. It's one of the titles. Do you know what the other one is?
What You Will.
That's right. You're in. I'm not quite sure if Twelfth Night is more of a casual title, like Much Ado About Nothing would be, or All's Well That Ends Well. But it would have a relationship to Christmas. And you know, there are some people who might say, well, it's about the 12th day after Christmas, and this is the day of Epiphany. And I don't know if it's so much Twelfth Night as it is more What You Will, if you know what I mean, and more epiphany for so many of the characters on stage. So, yes, we'll have an awful lot of fun with the epiphany of the heart on stage.
Well, you know, of course, that Twelfth Night, which is actually the night before Epiphany, was traditionally, in Elizabethan times, a feast night, a festival night. And I think that there is certainly a nod to that in here, because it was a night when servants would trade places with their masters, and people would dress as something they were not. So I think there's a relationship there.
You're right. And of course that has a distant relation to a Lupercal festival, which Shakespeare mentions in Julius Caesar, and even to other pagan rituals, for instance. But it was also a way of accepting oneself and accepting the others in one's life. And so, you know, switching status, which was big, the master became the servant became the master, swapping attire.
The male became the female.
Yes. And so, you know, you in essence put yourselves in another person's shoes. Well, in our production, we're taking that to the nth degree. So, for instance, one of Shakespeare's innovations, Malvolio, who is an unsmiling steward, born into stewardship, into servitude, as it were, albeit for a rich countess. He has a very famous scene whether you know Shakespeare or not, you probably know about the yellow cross garter scene, and he breaks into his yellow hose. Well, he breaks into his mistress's, in our production, he breaks into his mistress's closet, and he wears all of her fabulous things. This is Johnny Lee Davenport, you know, who's been with us playing Oberon and Prospero before. So he looks really big and really fabulous in these things. And we have a number of other actors who are intentionally cast against gender, as two of them are identical twins. So our Sebastian is in fact a female instead of a male. Our Mariah, who is called a giant in the play, who's also a servant. This is a young man named Crash, and he's good 6'4", 200 and something, and a very convincing woman as well. So what we're doing is it's a festival of light. It's a festival or a celebration for December as we move into the solstice, as we move into Hanukkah and Christmas, Kwanzaa, everything else. The new year,
right?
Because Shakespeare also treats on time in this, which I'd love to talk about. But so it's a festival, and so we're creating a turn of the century Parisian American music hall inside Dixon Gallery and Gardens Weingartner Auditorium, where we've done Taming of the Shrew, where we've done It's a Wonderful Life,
sure,
and Hamlet. So we're creating a false proscenium in those lovely, beautiful, lovely theatrical backdrop. And the relationship will be very intimate with the audience. But these are performers. These are entertainers who are very elegantly attired, who then move into other people's clothing with great ease and fall to the floor with great ease. I say that and still also say it's a family show.
Yeah. We're talking about Twelfth Night. It is the next production from Tennessee Shakespeare Company. Opens next Thursday with the preview night and runs Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 7 p.m. and Sunday at 3 p.m. Then the following week, the 18th, 19th, 20th, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, also at 7, Sunday the 21st at 3 p.m. Get your tickets. I know the first week is selling fast, so 759-0604 or tnshakespeare.org. Dan McClary is directing the show, and he's joined me today. Getting back to the whole gender thing, of course, that's one of the big themes of the play itself, is because, of course, in Shakespeare's time, all the women were played, especially the young women, were played by men. So in this case, you have a man playing a woman who is playing a man, and we don't really find out about that until the end of the play. So it's I think he was doing some sly digs at gender role, you know, stereotyping at the time.
He probably was. I mean, all the roles in his time were taken by men. Men or boys.
Right.
The boys usually played the older women, or women, I should say. With us, we have a dance with the audience that begins the festival, as it were, the celebration. And so the audience gets to know the actors just a little bit before we get going with the text, and then we create a shipwreck on stage. And so you see the identical twins get separated,
right,
in the ocean. And then part of the pleasure, you know, identical twins, which Shakespeare had twins. I've got twins. There's something, certainly 400 years ago, it was deeply special about them, especially identical twins as opposed to fraternal. But the twin idea dramaturgically had magic associated with it, and of course lent itself to great theatrical trickery. And here we'll still see the two twins, but part of the pleasure for the audience is noting the distinction between the two identical twins, but seeing that the other characters on stage don't see the difference.
Exactly.
Until ultimately they do.
Exactly.
Well, you know, something starts to happen in the play right away. It is thoughtless. The heart is absolutely thoughtless. And Viola, one of the great characters that Shakespeare has drawn, she's shipwrecked, and she launches right into going to serve the rich Count of Illyria, which is was indeed a country,
right,
is no longer, so it's more fabled now than realistic. But they're shipwrecked for some unknown reason, and they find their way through this strange and magical town of Illyria to people who, maybe on the surface, if they were using only their intellect, only their reason, they might never have attempted to fall in love with. But they're led by the heart, and so the dance at the opening lets the audience know who is playing who. So we'll know the genders. And then we have a heart dance, so it's a reverence of sorts. very Elizabethan in that way, or very music hall, turn of the century music hall. And so we attempt to open the hearts and open minds with this to allow for the fact that Orsino is in fact unwittingly falling in love with the young boy, who is in fact Viola, and Viola, playing the young boy, has increasingly fallen in love with Orsino. And even Antonio, the mariner, might well be falling in love with the young male Sebastian, who happens to be female. And so it's fun. You know, it's a lot of fun, but it's also built with some of the most beautiful music and elegant verse. And elegant verse against some really rowdy comedy of Toby Belch,
sure.
Festy the Fool, who's the other creation of Shakespeare, and Sir Andrew Aguecheek. And I've been able to get three of my favorite comedians together from the West Coast and New York together for this. Paul Kiernan comes back, who played our Petruchio, to play Belch. Brad DePlanche comes to play Festy, who's a great clown out of New York. And John Leonard Thompson, who's a Broadway guy and film and TV guy, plays Andrew Aguecheek. And so my job in rehearsal is to get out of the way. I don't always succeed. Usually I want to join them on stage. But I just get out of the way for them. But against this profound comedy, and some of it is, some of it is very low, of course, which... some of my favorite, but it's in relationship to this very elegant verse that a very elegant, for instance, Countess Olivia, played by our gorgeous Tracy Thomason, has. But even the elegant woman, who is 6 foot tall and in all red and long black sleeves, has this language that turns her into a cougar or then a wolf. And so finally we have to send time in the character of Festy to freeze it. So there's a lot of theatricality to it. And I think that, I think Shakespeare had come to a point in his life where his heart had led him into a number of areas that his intellect otherwise might not have wanted him to go. And I think it was, this being his final comedy, it also has a great deal of poignance in it as well. So it has politics in it. Mm-hmm. It has social awareness in it, and it has the personal heart involved in it as well. And it's for everyone. So it's quite a beautiful story. It's a beautiful story for the holiday season, too.
Absolutely. It's going to be a lot of fun. We want to remind folks about your Free Will Kids Nights.
Yes, our first one is nearly sold out. That's next Thursday, our first preview. But then the following Thursday, we're about half sold right now, our Free Will Kids Night, which is made possible by our Barbara B. Apperson Angel Fund, is when adults can bring up to 4 children, 17 years and younger, for free. So
with an adult ticket.
With one adult ticket, and you got to stay. You can't just drop them off.
Babysitting.
Some of them have tried. So you can bring up to 4 as long as seats last. And we're very appreciative to the fund for that. And we're very appreciative to Kevin Sharp and his extraordinary staff at the Dixon for making this possible, and Pat and Ernest Kelly, who are our sponsors as well. And all of our student matinees are sold out for this. These are morning matinees. We've got 3 of them. They're sold out for this as well, which is unusual for a play that's not necessarily in the curriculum either.
Yeah.
So it'll be a lot of fun to see how they respond.
Well, this is going to be just a lot of fun. It opens next Thursday. That performance is just about sold out. Also Friday and Saturday at 7 p.m., Sunday at 3 p.m., and then the same thing the following week, the 18th through the 21st. Get your tickets. It is general admission. Remember, so you'll want to get there early, 7590604 or tnshakespeare.org. My guest today, Dan McClary, directing Twelfth Night. Thanks so much for coming in.
It's a great pleasure as always, Daryl. Thank you.
Checking on the Arts is made possible by contributing listeners and by Memphis College of Art, presenting the 2014 Fall BFA exhibition in the Main Gallery, and works by Esther Seeks in the Alumni Gallery through December 11th, with opening reception Friday, December 5th from 6 to 8 p.m. Information at mca.edu. Memphis College of Art, they make art work.